The reading today is from Genesis 39, which is found on page 59 of the church Bibles. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And even though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with, or be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did.
Thanks, Chaz, and hello again, everyone. We as a species are pretty complicated. Humans are a different kind of bunch in many ways, and we're very different to each other, aren't we? But I'm pretty sure there's one thing we all have in common. It's the desire to succeed. I reckon if you pick anyone from anywhere and ask them, "Do you want to succeed in life?" Like, surely everyone says, "Yeah, of course, I want to succeed." In fact, if you look in bookshops or you sort of scroll through social media, you'll find very quickly there's a lot of money to be made in promising other people, "I can help you succeed." At least promising you've got the secret sauce to help them be healthy, wealthy and wise, to be better looking, better at work, richer, success in the kitchen, relationships. Like, you can sell the promise of success. And I think it's because we all want to succeed. I think our struggle, though, is knowing, what does success look like? What is the successful life? Not all of us want to be CEOs or prime ministers. Not all of us have the genetics to be elite sports stars. Not all of us have children to raise. And not all of us think money is a noble means to pursue. What do you want to be successful at in your life? Well, for those perhaps who are older, you can look back and see, what are the successes of your life? What do you count as the big ones? Perhaps to ask this question in a bit more of an unsettling way, what would it mean to not succeed in life? Is it not getting that relationship or the career, the family goals? Is it never winning that prize you've got your eyes set on? that recognition or just never really getting to that comfortable, luxurious retirement you've been dreaming of. See, success is a pretty complex topic, I think, and I'm afraid that when our hearts are left to their own devices to dream and scheme, when we start measuring success, comparing ourselves to our peers, I think we end up opening ourselves up to all kinds of dangers and problems. Jealousy, anxiety, bitterness or envy when we don't get the success we're after. Or if we do, pride or arrogance or disdain for all the losers not as good as me. The good thing is we have a God who doesn't want to leave it up to us to define what a really successful life is. He doesn't just leave it up to us to muddle our way through this. Instead, we have a God who speaks, who tells us and shows us what a successful life really looks like. And so as we come to the story of Joseph today in Genesis, we have God showing us a sure way to know what real success is, not flimsy versions of succeeding, but success according to God himself. I have to admit, a story about a slave who ends up being thrown in jail for something he didn't do, that doesn't really sound like a success story, does it? It's not a life we aspire to, but as we look more closely at the story of Joseph, I'm hoping we'll all head out from here today knowing what success is in God's eyes. It's knowing God is with us and for us and really living like it. Living like that through all the ups and downs of life, that's real success. Knowing God is with us and for us. It means that life will be full of challenges and setbacks, but success is walking with God through it all, and it's a far better type of success than just a nice, easy life or a big trophy that collects dust. We've been in the book of Genesis as a church for a few weeks now, and we've jumped forward into the story of Joseph, kind of picking up in the middle. So if you're wondering, who's Joseph, what's going on, what have I missed, don't worry. We're going to start by rewinding a little and picking up the story of Joseph from the start, back in chapter 37. Just think of this as, you know, one of those TV shows you start watching and it starts with confusion, you know, what's going on, then they do a flashback to fill it in. That's kind of what we're doing now, okay? So let's rewind a little bit and work out who Joseph is and why he's in Egypt. Now, in Genesis, we've been following the storyline of Abraham because God promised to Abraham, just this one seemingly random guy that God has chosen, God promised Abraham that through his family, God would bless the whole world. God would wind back the curse of sin and death that we all live under. And for the last few weeks, we've been following the story of Jacob, that is Abraham's grandson. I've got a bit of a family tree, a very basic one, I think, to sort of show you how this all works. We've been following the story of Jacob. He's the one who is a trickster. He grasped his way through life, and God gave him a new name, Israel. So Jacob is also called Israel. And it's from Jacob, the patriarch, we get the 12 sons who become eventually the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, you see right down the bottom, you might not be able to see, Joseph. We'll get to him in a second, because the story we've seen so far with Jacob and his brother Esau, it was basically chaos and drama. You can go back and catch up on the stories of Jacob and Esau and Red Lentil Stew. They're all on our website. You see, with two brothers, there was chaos. You can imagine that a family with 12 sons, there's a fair few problems. And they do indeed have some problems. The young adults group here at Tonsley, the group that I lead with Karina and a few others, we get to there on Wednesday nights. And this Wednesday, we started our time sharing the worst thing we've ever done to a sibling. Perhaps you can play that game on the way home today. What's the worst thing you've ever done to a sibling? It was very enlightening. We learned a lot about each other. But even the worst of us were no way near what the 12 sons of Jacob got up to. Full-blown hate and attempted murder, basically. Now, if you have your Bible open, I encourage you to turn back to Genesis 37, which explains kind of this family dynamic of the 12 sons. And it also traces out for us why Joseph is a slave in Egypt. How did he get there? In Genesis 37, if you have a look at verse 2, see, Joseph, as 17 years old, was out looking after the flocks with his older brothers. And then at the end of verse 2, he brought their father, Jacob, a bad report about his brothers. Now, some of you have younger siblings, little snots who always snitch, right? Like you know that type, right? They run off to mum and dad and get you in trouble every time. Some of you are the younger siblings, like me, And you would never do such a thing, would you? Surely. Not us. Not us younger siblings. Now, at this point, the end of verse 2, maybe what could have happened is the brothers of Joseph could have given him a bit of hard brotherly love and could have sorted it all out, a good noogie or a dead leg or just punch in the arm, just something to kind of put him in his place and teach him the wisdom of the ancient proverb, snitches get stitches. But no, it actually is far worse than this, because verse 3, Israel, that's Jacob with his new name, Israel the dad, he loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Isn't that devastating? He gets Joseph then a very special coat, a robe that it must have infuriated and enraged his brothers. He's the favourite, the snitch, who gets all the good stuff. And the brothers hate him. It gets worse still. Now, maybe Joseph is a bit like a 17-year-old, you know. Or maybe you can remember what it was like being 17 years old, where you had life all worked out. You'd realised everything you need to know about life and everyone else has got it wrong. They're all stupid. Joseph is that kind of 17-year-old. See, he had a dream, a prophetic dream about the future from God. This dream is all about his brothers one day bowing down to him. What does Joseph do? Goes and tells his brothers, guess what? Do you want to hear how great I am? One day you're all going to bow down to me. His brothers already hate him. It's pretty dumb, right? But he doesn't just do that once. He does it twice. He just can't read the room, or perhaps he just doesn't care what his brothers think. Now, I'll be honest. I'm a younger brother. I've got three older siblings. Even I, as I read about Joseph in Genesis 37, even I think, yeah, he's a snot. He's terrible. Or to use the Aussie slang, he's a real tool, actually, I think, at this point in his life. Still, that doesn't excuse at all what happens next. Chapter 37, from verse 12, if you have a look, his brothers conspire at first to murder him. They step back from that the last minute. They decide to sell him into slavery instead for 20 pieces of silver. Although, to be fair, I'm not sure slavery is much better than death in the ancient world. For the parents here, I know it's very easy sometimes to fixate and to ruminate on our own failures and shortcomings as parents. Can I suggest, I know this is a low bar, but can I suggest if our children don't sell each other into slavery, we've done a better job than Jacob. You know, that's okay. We've done okay because even Jacob, an absolute failure as a father, even through him and his family, God is working towards blessing the whole world. We might think we have failed, but we see here God's plans will not fail. So we're going to jump over chapter 38, which is basically a story of how Joseph's brother Judah is absolutely terrible. We'll just actually get to chapter 39 with Joseph now in Egypt. He's a slave. He's in the home of Potiphar, a local bigwig. Can you imagine for a moment this young man, 17, 18, sold by his own brothers to cruel slave traders, dragged hundreds of kilometres to be plonked in a whole new culture, different language, different morality and ethics, different customs, and of course, different gods being worshipped all around him. And he's a slave. This kid, young man who had literal dreams of glory and success, at this point, his life is no longer his own. This cocky kid with the best clothes and the world before him, he's lost it all at this point, hasn't he? And you can imagine in the dark watches of the night, Joseph thinking back and thinking, realizing a big part of this was his fault. His ego, his self-centeredness, his bragging to his brothers, it's contributed to get him there. And yet, what looks like, and I'm sure at different points felt like, absolute failure, it turns out it's not. Have a look. We're in chapter 39, verse 2. We know he's in Egypt, in slavery, but the very first thing we're told about this in verse 2, the Lord is with him. The Lord is with him. Is he all alone in Egypt? Big bad Egypt? Not at all. Is he a failure, abandoned by everyone? Not at all. God is with him. And notice, actually, it comes up a number of times in this chapter. It's God who gives him success in his work. The credit Joseph gets for doing well in his job is all due to God being with him. It says it time and again there. It makes you think, well, was Joseph just naturally a brilliant slave? Was he a tireless and intelligent worker? Maybe. Maybe not. Either way, what gives him success in his role is God himself. Let's just pause there for a moment in our story. Like, isn't that true for all of us all the time? Some of us have had a lot of success in different parts of life. Others will have plenty of success, whether it be work or sport or music or whatever. There are some very successful people here. Why are you successful? Is it because you did it with your wonderful talent and your hard work? Oh, of course, that's part of it. But God-given talent is just that. It's given by God. If you had the intelligence or the creativity or the hard work or the whatever it is that helped you succeed in your workplace or your studies or whatever, did you make yourself intelligent? Or did God create you in such a way to make it possible? Did you give yourself the opportunities and education that you needed to get there, or was that given by God? The genetics, the environment, the health you've been able to enjoy, all those things. Now, this is certainly not the main idea in the passage today, but as we talk about success, it strikes me this is one of the first things we get wrong so often. How quick we are to give ourselves credit when we win. How quick we are to credit our own intelligence, our own fitness, our own hard work. But just like Joseph, we have no hope for success unless God makes it so. And of course, the flip side is true, isn't it? How quick we are to blame God or others when things just don't go as we think they should. Like we're owed something. It's interesting though, Joseph's true success here is actually not about his job performance or his promotions. Because at the end of the chapter, he's in jail, right? It's hardly a successful career at that point. The key thing to note is actually even in jail, God is with him there. If you flick over to verses 20 and 21, in prison, God is with him. See, in this chapter, the real success, the deeper and better success than just job performance, is how Joseph knows God is with him. And Joseph lives with God as his God. That's real success. Not what we see on TikTok or Instagram. Those versions of success don't really count for much. Because God doesn't count our trophies. God doesn't look at our personal bests or how many worldwide holidays we've taken or how big our house is. He cares about how we live with him as our God. As we look at here from verse 7 onwards about how Joseph ended up in jail, we realize that integrity, living faithfully with God as God, living integrity with God as God through hardship, through persecution, through temptation, that's the successful life. See, we so quickly fixate on outcomes. We aim for the success we can see or others can see. God cares about us and our heart and our character, and far less than we do about specific kind of outcomes. See, if you think about this story, it's really because of Joseph's integrity that he kind of messed up his skyrocketing career. He was so good at what he was doing. Everything he touched turned to gold, because God made it so. Joseph kept getting promoted. He ends up running the whole household, which I guess is kind of like running a medium-sized business. He's like the chief executive of Potiphar Incorporated, you know. It's probably a big household, lots of money, lots of things happening. And this is still as a teenager, maybe early 20s. He's an absolute star. He's going places. And I don't know if you noticed this, verse 6, to cap it all off, a successful guy, he's also well-built and handsome. In our world, we're obsessed with image. And in our world, it sounds like Joseph's got it made. But in this story, it's almost as if being too good looking is, well, actually, it's a trap. This is almost like a warning that setting our hearts on being really good looking is dangerous. Because, well, how is being really good looking good for us? In Joseph's case, it just leads him to temptation and to trouble. Almost as if being a real looker is not all it's cracked up to be. Take note. There's danger in our obsession with our own image. Now, some of you Perhaps not many. Some of you will know of the great moral philosopher who spoke to this quite a lot 20 years ago or thereabouts. The philosopher is a guy called Derek Zoolander. And some of you will be laughing because you realise it's very silly, but in a movie, which I'll call a profound documentary about Zoolander's life, this is what he says. There has to be more to life than just being really, really ridiculously good-looking. Now, if you don't know the movie, I'm not exactly recommending it, but there is something in that for all of us, right? And apologies to those who will be hearing Zoolander quotes from someone they love for the rest of the day. It's silly, but actually, it's right. Joseph's good looks work against him here, and it draws the attention of Potiphar's wife, who's very forward, and invites him into her bed. As you read the story, it's kind of easy to sort of keep reading. Of course, he does the right thing by saying no, but just spare a moment to think how difficult this would have been for Joseph. Joseph has opportunity. He's all alone. He's single. He's away from his family. No one will judge him for this. It probably wasn't too unusual for slaves to be put in this position. That power dynamic is in play. And in this culture, no one would have batted an eyelid, we presume. What's the harm? And on top of all that, you consider the likely state of Joseph's heart. He's been betrayed by his family, transported away from all comfort and affection. At a heart level, why would he care about what's right? He's been the victim of a horrible injustice. Surely he's entitled to sort of act out and do what he wants, right? And if Joseph had said yes, either this first instance or, you know, as the pressure continued from Mrs. Potiphar day in, day out, if he gave in, it would have made his life far easier. But with brave integrity, in the midst of all that, Joseph, in verse 8, he refuses. He gives a few reasons. He says it's going to be an abuse of my position. It's an offence against your husbands, and it's a sin against God. In a situation where he could have really done as he pleased, Joseph knew, actually, no, he couldn't, because God is with him. And he knew the goodness and the character of God. And so he called this what it is, not a bit of harmless flirting, not just a bit of fun between consenting adults or just casual sex. He calls it what it is. It's wicked, a sin against God. Now from here, Joseph's career takes some real twists and turns, but it seems here this is what success is all about. Despite what it costs him, he lives with his God as God, which is a life of integrity. Being faithful to God, regardless of outcome, regardless of consequence, standing firm, even through temptation. I think it's fair to ask, what would we do if we found ourselves in Joseph's shoes? Probably very hard to know unless you're actually in his shoes, I guess. So then you think, well, are our hearts set on desiring this kind of success? Are we set on integrity, like Joseph was? Or are we a bit wayward in the fantasies and desires of our heart? Or do we put a pause on our integrity when we're on the internet, when no one sees, when no one knows? Notice Joseph's example of calling something what it is. Dreaming of, you know, sexual experiences with someone we're not married to, or watching pornography, it's not just harmless entertainment. It's damaging in all kinds of ways, but it's ultimately a sin against God. Now, as we talk here in terms of success or failure, I think it's right for us to aspire to succeeding like Joseph has here. It's a good moral model for us. But we also feel that we can't be like this, at least not all the time, not in every area of life. See, if you know, Egyptian slave owners aren't your particular temptation, well, you know too well what is your temptation. Joseph himself, he failed miserably as a brother. We all fail. And so in a moment, we'll consider more how even as we fail in our faithfulness to God, we can actually still be counted successful. God still makes it possible to be counted as a success, even despite our failures. What an extraordinary thing, which we'll get to in a moment. But for now, we keep going through the story of Joseph, the hotshot CEO, After this sexual harassment drags on and on, one day Mrs. Potiphar just ambushes him, grabs him, and then Joseph again, with integrity, he runs away and he leaves his cloak behind. He runs away, but he really runs headlong into disaster, doesn't he? Don't know why. Perhaps she's been insulted. Perhaps she's been spurned too many times. But Miss Potiphar just takes revenge at this point. She brilliantly sets Joseph up. She does it very subtle, cunning ways, accusing him of trying to sleep with her. Now, if Joseph had compromised on his integrity, if he'd given in to temptation, this actually wouldn't have happened. His career would have been fine, right? But no, success is living with God as his God, honouring God first. And Joseph left the outcomes of that to God. And so when Potiphar, the master, hears the false accusation, he sends Joseph to prison. In this case, a fate worse than slavery, worse than death probably. And we started thinking about that question. What does a successful life look like? We've seen this hotshot, brilliant guy, now locked up in jail. I don't think any of us would aspire to that kind of life, would we? Wasted potential, rotting away forever in a jail cell. Yet the weird thing is, this is Joseph being perfectly successful in God's eyes. Success for us is so often about outcomes, impressive looking things. But God, who is with us through each and every circumstance, he cares about how we are faithful to him through our relationship breakdown, through our health problems, within the fear of our failure, with our poverty, or even in prison. The successful life, as God sees it, is maintaining integrity through that hardship, trusting him. And what's more, sometimes, like with Joseph, faithfulness to God is what causes our downfall. Do you notice that? His downfall really came about by his integrity. Jesus himself tells us this. It's normal in this world, actually, to follow in Joseph's kind of footsteps, to have people falsely accuse us or target us because we seek to please God. I'll take one place in the New Testament. This is Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount. This is Matthew chapter 5. Jesus says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when not if, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice, be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecute the prophets who were before you." Success, Jesus says. Blessed are you, successful are you, if you stand for Jesus with your integrity, with your righteousness, and you cop it. Perhaps you've experienced this. Maybe as you've sought to honour God's designs and plans for sex and marriage, that is, sex being a good thing given for and only for marriage between a man and a woman. Perhaps as you've done this, you've felt people falsely accusing you of hatred, being judgmental or oppressed. Or in other areas of life, perhaps you've been targeted for refusing to be dishonest or unethical in work. You know, it's for the good of the company if we do this. Just take a shortcut here. You find you're not the favourite team member when you say, "No, it's wrong. I'm not going to do it." Or just very simply, when others find out that you belong to Christ, you feel the scorn, you notice the cold shoulders. That is success, no matter what the outcome is. That is success. A life of integrity, living with God as our God, that's the true measure of success. And if that's a measure of success, you need to know that's very freeing. If that's what we aspire to as successful, we can't go wrong. Even if we lose a job or we stuff up a relationship or we live a very simple life without much money at all, we can still have a successful life. And if I can put it this way, if that's what our hearts are set on, succeeding in God's eyes, we may find ourselves a little bit less enslaved to our career, to our grades, to our health and exercise regime. We can find joy, thanking God when those things are going well, but we can also find great joy knowing God is with us when it all falls apart. Now, where do we need to finish, though, is as we've looked at Joseph's frankly, I think, almost superhuman integrity, as I mentioned before, I think it also just makes us feel inadequate in comparison. And so if I just said today, well, go and be like Joseph and left it there, we'd have a big problem, wouldn't we? Because Joseph's story is not just a story about being an example for us. It includes an example for us, but it's far, far bigger. This story, the story of Joseph, is really all about God's plan to save people. See, what Joseph doesn't know at this point, what his brothers don't know, what Mrs. Potiphar doesn't know, what everyone doesn't know, is that a terrible famine is coming. Everyone in Egypt is doomed, actually. They are in massive trouble. They're living under the shadow of death, but they just don't know it. As we keep reading Genesis, we see Joseph has been sent by God to bring salvation, to be a blessing to that part of the world, and actually the kind of blessing to the world that he promised Abraham. What this means then is, in the wider scope of the Bible, this story again is not just about saving people from famine, but it points us to the bigger reality that Genesis starts with. God's judgment is coming into our world for all our sin, for our wickedness, for the ways we've failed in our integrity. And every one of us, every single person, lives under the shadow of death, but doesn't know it. But God has a plan to save us. So he sent his favourite son, his only son, who would be disbelieved by his own family, rejected by his brothers at different points. He is rejected by his own kind. He was betrayed by 20 pieces of silver, just like Joseph. Jesus was falsely accused, and despite his incredible integrity and his righteousness, he was wrongly punished. Jesus was handed over in a fancy robe, covered in his own blood, to a fate worse than death, death on a cross, death under the judgment of God. And just like Joseph, Jesus was sent ahead to save people. Jesus, the perfectly righteous man who never failed at all to live with integrity, the perfectly successful man. His journey to the cross, at one level, looks like an absolute failure, doesn't it? He never married, no kids, not a dollar to his name, his friends abandoned him, despised, mocked, hated. But this was the ultimate act of obedience and trust in his heavenly Father. And what Jesus does through his obedience is offer us not only forgiveness, not only does he offer to cleanse us and forgive us for all our failures, but also to share in his success, to share in his integrity and righteousness. See, if we trust Jesus, he draws us into his success. We win if we're on Team Jesus. We have his righteousness. We have his success and his integrity if we're with him. For all of us, especially those who are still exploring and wondering about who Jesus is and just still have lots of questions about what he's all about, please don't go away from here thinking, I just need to work harder at being really, really ridiculously good. Please hear, we need and can only be perfectly successful, perfectly righteous, as we trust Jesus. He makes us righteous in God's eyes. It's an incredible thing. It's amazing, because Christ succeeded, we can live the truly successful life, following him, not being perfect, but trusting him. Truly, the successful life is the one that clings firmly to Jesus and his righteousness, clinging firmly through temptation, through failure, through hardship. We actually don't need that shiny, photoshopped life, like that Australian dream. We don't need that to say we've won, because we have Christ, and there is nothing better. So would you join me in prayer? Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much that you are with us and you are good to us through all the ups and downs of life. Please help us all grow in our desire to have integrity and faithfulness to you. Please also grow our trust and our thankfulness that in Christ you have given us all we need to stand before you, a perfect success story in your eyes. Help us trust then his success and his righteousness, not our own. And so then help us cling firmly to Jesus and his righteousness through all of life, standing firm with integrity for the sake of your glory. Amen.